possibly one of the most interesting, and was not a factory, but the brilliant stores, which we were visiting medical officers to the stores, and following that, so when George Floyd started Fine Fair, we were asked to be medical officers there, and I became medical officer of Fine Fair as well, and that went on until it folded up, really. And our job was to examine every new employee as they, before they were actually taken on, preferably. It didn't always happen. And we were expected to announce whether they were fit to be employed or not. And if there was any doubt, we'd have a word with the person themselves first. But it was very rare that you failed anyone. And we were also asked if we would look into their conditions of work, for instance, rooms for the staff to rest in, because they were building supermarkets all over the place. And I had to go all over the country, as it happened, following the development of Fine Fair. Used to be absent from the practice at least one day a week, which didn't go down very well with my partners, but it did bring in money, which, as far as Jimmy Ross was concerned, was a very good thing, and I think the rest of it realised. And that went on for, it's difficult to remember how long it went on for. Do you remember when Fine Fair finally folded up? But I remember the day that it finally folded up. It was quite dramatic. We were all, I was actually at Gatehouse at the time, where the headquarters were, and the personnel manager just came and said, "This is our last day here," just like that. This is what happens now, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like my laundry yesterday. He delivered my clothes yesterday. He said, "We're not coming anymore. We've gone into liquidation." Oh, that's just Fine Fair was the branch came from the stores, of course. And then after George Floyd, James Gulliver took over. Remember James Gulliver?
No, I can't say.
What was he was brought in when the Western took over the actual thing from George Floyd.
Right.
And he sacked George Floyd. George Floyd immediately went off and started his own supermarket in North London, but it didn't go. Didn't last very long. Keep on mentioning George Floyd because he actually lived across the road from us in Parkway, and we were really friendly with the whole family, of course. George Gulliver. Oh, I thought you'd know more about him. He was quite. Remember him, don't you? Lived in that house next to Jack Lee on the Coneydale, that corner house.
Right.
In what is that road?
Which road? Where are you now, dear? Sorry.
Dick's Law Rise.
Mm-hmm.
Dick's Law Rise.
Yeah, no. That's Coneydale. There's a corner house there.
Right.
And then there's the house just around the corner in the main road. What's that road going up to the
library? Sherrod's Park Road, isn't it?
No, Sherrod's...
You're on Parkway.
Yes.
Coneydale goes off Parkway.
Yes.
And where is the house?
No, the White Bridge.
Oh,
what
you're
road
way
up.
We're
at the
Dingsville
White Bridge.
Dingsville Road.
Dingsville Road.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what was I talking about? Anyway, that's where he lived. But that's in Ontario.
So, which other companies did you operate with at that time, David?
The other companies, as I say, the main one was Shredded Wheat, the stores, and I did make a list. Oh, Argyle Pete, with kid named Gulliver, sorry, Argyle Foods. Oh, the bakery. We acted as
Sunblessed.
Yes, with the name of the chap? The chap at the bakery who was in the Rotary as well.
Not to worry. If names have gone slightly vague, don't worry too much.
But the jobs we were asked to do was to make sure that people were employed, were fit for employment. Mm-hmm. We used to do a general sort of quick examination and a history.
Yes.
Places like Norton, although he was taken over by Murray, we used to have to deal with quite a lot of the foreign bodies that used to get into their eyes from the grinding wheels. They were always coming across to our surgery because it was across the road from us.
Yes.
And we got quite adept at removing these bits of metal from people's eyes. and of course we knew one would get paid for these things outside the health service.
Right.
Not very much, but a retaining fee, I think they used to call it.
Yes. So what about the working conditions? Did you have a chance of those to see whether they were suitable?
Yes, we were asked to if we had any opinions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's right to say that we were available. Most of these actors had a nurse who looked after us when we visited them.
Mm-hmm.
And she would come up with problems sometimes and ask for our guidance, and we usually met with some members of the staff two or three times a year, probably.
Right.
Sometimes at the board level, sometimes just individually.
Any major events during the period you were working with them? Or was it all reasonably calm?
And such as accidents and things, you mean?
Well, yes, anything really unusual?
Not offhand.
Right.
Give it a bit of thought.
May occur later.
We were very respected people in those days, the doctors were, and we used to get invited to their functions in these various places, and every Christmas we'd get a hamper from Nabisco, for instance, and afterwards they had a shop at Nabisco, as it became, and we were allowed to go there and buy things at their shop, reduce prices and things like that. And it was all a very pleasant occupation, where we got to know the nurses, of course, and they got to know us. Quite a cosy relationship, not of these jobs we had. I don't know whether cosy is the right word. But I've spoken enough. I think these chaps may have better memories of me.
Well, I mean, David's given you sort of the general picture, the general. I came to Garden City to join the practice in 1955, and of course, at that stage, I was leaving the established, my senior partners, Jimmy Ross, David Goss, Vondi Mackay, and I was helping out when they wanted, for some reason or other, they didn't want to go to Nabisco or something, but I go and do the things. So I started off in the practice by helping out mostly at Nabisco, the wheat, as it was called.
The wheat, yes.
Doing medicals there. And after I'd been in the practice for about 5 years, I suppose it was, I was approached by a representative from Smith, Klein and French, who were coming to the town, who wanted a medical officer, and was I interested in doing it. So I said, yes, please. I went along, had an interview, and I got the job. And for 25 years then, I was a part-time medical officer, as it was then, to Smith, Klein and French, the pharmaceutical company, which entailed doing two afternoon sessions a week, at which one examined the new intake of production staff, annual medicals as well as the ones who were established there, and general advice, and that went on, as I say, for about 25 years. In addition to that, I also, as we all did, helped out at the other jobs as well. But that was what was my pet baby, really. And then at the end of the 25 years, I was coming up towards my retirement anyway, and they wanted, the business had expanded, of course, by that stage, and they wanted a full-time medical officer. So that, at the end of my tip with them, and they appointed a full-time person. Then, of course, they went away from the Garden City anyway. Indeed. But I was with them for about 25 years. Yes. That was my pet, as it were. But just filling in for all the others as well when necessary. Fine fare, as David mentioned, travelling around when he didn't want to go somewhere. Various members were asked to go, and we went, as David says, to various places around the London area when they were opening up new stores, just to examine their personnel. At SmithKline, had a very nice sick quarters. And they had a full-time nurse, a sister, Sister Young, she was. She was a very nice person. I think that about covers what I did, really.
Which other companies did you sort of pop into occasionally?
Well, Shredded Wheat mainly.
Yes.
Pine Fair, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one.
Well, I used to do Ardeth Tobacco.
Yes, I don't think I did Ardeth.
I think that would... I'm not quite sure how we acquired that. I think it was one that was there before I came.
Yes, I think it was done, yes.
It was Jimmy's, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it was delegated to me when I arrived.
Yeah, that's right.
Once it was decided that I was going to stay, which is another whole story. But so this would be 1960, 61, that sort of time, which, of course, is very near the end of the... of the time scale. I think the thing that impressed me about it was, firstly, there was a, as you say, as there were in all the other factories, a professional industrial nurse, although they weren't called that in those days, but it was clearly the beginnings of the occupational health service, which we subsequently developed in all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing that surprised me, perhaps it wouldn't have surprised other people, was on one particular occasion I was taken around the factory, and was, because they used to make 333 cigarettes, I think was the particular variety, but they were turning out Wills and Players and all sorts of other people's cigarettes, and I really hadn't appreciated until then, I think, the interconnection between the various industries and what they did for each other. It's come the full circle now, of course, because we've got our local Ocado going to do Morrison's and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yes.
But that's another story. But very much like David Rogers, I was employed to fill in on when the more regular partners weren't there. But as far as Ardeth was concerned, I think I more or less dealt with that. And again, until such time as they closed down or were taken over or moved away, when I was asked if I wanted any of the contents of the medical room, which is where the desk comes in, because I acquired that really rather beautiful oak desk, which I think was quite a nice indicator of the quality of the facilities that we were given. I mean, they didn't give us rubbish rooms. They did give us nice kit, and that was my desk at Ardeth, which subsequently I bought and used, and it's now in the possession of my son-in-law.
Who can do a better photograph if you need one.
You got a desk, but I got crates of... tobacco came in, tobacco crates.
Oh, right.
And I floored my loft with it.
Okay.
they delivered them. I lived in Parkway at the time. They delivered them over the hedge, complete, as still as boxes.
Right.
And I had to break them all out and take all the nails out. yeah. on the front lawn, yes. and then proceeded to.
Yeah.
Young and vigorous Dr. Goss.
That's right.
Young and vigorous Dr.
Nice.
Goss. But we also got from the medical room the two medical room beds, which were 2 foot wide, I should think, and with a headboard and a footboard painted
green
and straw palliasse mattresses on them. So that if you were suffering from dysmenorrhea or something at our death, you were put to lie down on this hard straw mattress on this green bed.
That's right.
And what else? We got the medical instrument cupboard,
yeah.
which was shelves at the top with glass doors and a big cupboard underneath,
right.
which we subsequently cut into two, and the bookshelf is still here. But the bottom bit went somewhere else.
As they do, as they
yes,
do.
Yes, that's right. So,
what about any particular medical conditions that were prevalent at the time, which perhaps are not now?
Well, I think there was one that certainly had us all foxed to begin with, and that was the PTFE thing,
right, yes.
which where you've got people. I think it was the plastics firm, wasn't it?
ICI.
It may have been ICI, but people who handled PTFE and smoked.
Polypenko.
This was the great thing, wasn't it?
Polypenko.
Right.
Polypenko, another one.
Yeah, yes. Oh, that's right.
Yes.
And if you smoked, having handled PTFE and then got the stuff on your cigarette, it produced symptoms that were very like flu. And so you'd get these little quirky epidemics of people coming in with apparent flu, which disappeared in 24 hours. And I think it was some time before everybody tumbled to what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who did the research which run it to earth, but it became published in the journals. And then we were able to warn people about this. Another good reason for giving up smoking.
Yes.
And that was certainly one that got in our way. The foreign bodies in the eye was another.
Oh, yes.
The other thing, of course, was TB. We had the Mass TB X-ray unit, which used to visit the...
Oh, yes, I remember those.
And most
blood
people had to have one checked before they were taken
off.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes, at Smith Klein, we used to have yearly... blood transfusion, blood collection, as it were,
yeah.
unit facilities.
The give blood.
We gave
system.
Blood.
Yes.
That's right. The
yeah.
medical officer was expected to stop by giving his pint.
Set the example,
so,
yes.
And as we others followed suit. That was about once a year we used to do that. Yes. I don't remember any illnesses at all, quite frankly, relating to Smith Klein. Perhaps I'm thinking of. Well, the only thing is, which is general, I suppose, to industry at that time, they introduced computers into the factory. And then, of course, everybody had to have their eyesight tested
right.
and prescriptions for new spectacles and all that. But
that
was pretty general, I imagine, with all companies at that time.
And it threw up some postural problems, didn't it?
Indeed it did.
People
yes, you're
who
quite
got
right,
cricked necks and bad backs.
The positions of the, yes.
That people hadn't sorted the fact that sitting at a computer for hours and hours was very different from doing the sort of things that people had previously done, like writing ledgers and all this stuff.
And they started producing those chairs with a back thing.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah,
the lumbar cushion.
That's
yes.
right.
Yes.
And the wrist support.
The cash out in the supermarkets.
Yes.
Repetitive strain injury.
That's
it.
That's
our project.
The other thing that we did, and I was reminded of this the other day in the surgery, would get called out as an emergency to one or other of the little factories along Hydeway and places like that.
Yes.
And, somebody would come in and say, somebody's collapsed at wherever. And one of us would shut our surgery door and push off to see what we could do. And somebody accosted me in the pharmacy at Petrie Surgery the other day and said, "You're Lord Perrin, aren't you?" So I said, "Yes, that's right." "You saved my life." He said, "Oh, really?" And I'd been called out to one of these little shed factories along Hyde Way. He'd had a heart attack, and I think I did the dramatic thing, like phoning the ambulance.
999.
But vital.
But, well, yes, I mean, I don't think we were into massive...
Well, you'd give him a jab of morphine.
Probably gave
that was
him,
all we could do.
They probably did something like that. Yeah. Certainly didn't do any dramatic life-saving stuff.
Right.
But, he was breathing and his heart was beating and he was conscious. So
that's a good start for,
a good start,
for staying alive,
yes,
isn't
right.
it?
Yes.
Yes.
So these sort of emergencies would crop up and, you know, would drop on us in the surgery without us having any fixed commitment to any of the factories. But of course it would happen at the factories as well, wouldn't it?
And a lot of it was suturing, cuts that needed stitching. And this applied also to the schools.